So just reading from the script, I want to welcome everybody who is members who are live streaming today. And just a reminder that we are recording this talk and it will be posted on the Florida Community Mindfulness's YouTube channel at some point in the future. Please stay for tea afterwards. And finally, next week, Betsy will be giving the talk. I will be here. And those of you who are here for Sam Warlick's Mind Seeking the Way talk, Betsy will give a Mind Seeking the Way talk, which is a different kind of talk than a usual Dharma talk. It really is talking about one's own life, you know, as far back as one wants to go. And to see that no matter what was unfolding in life, there was always something inside us that wanted to move us away from suffering and toward happiness and meaning. In Buddhism, we call that seeking the way. So she will be giving the talk next week. So before I go begin, just a quick question. I'm just sort of wondering. How many, and again, I realize there may be people here who would answer differently, but how many people who are here now who, if we started at 9:30, would not be able to come on a Sunday? So a few. Okay. Absolutely couldn't come on a Sunday? Or just, it would be more difficult. More difficult. I understand people travel and other things, but let me ask the opposite question. How many people would it be advantageous for them if we started at 9:30 on Sunday? And how many people couldn't care less? This is always the problem with getting feedback. Good. So this morning, well, also before I get into the talk at hand, just in terms of the practice we did this morning, the practice, the sitting practice, the walking practice, the practice of turning the light on inside the mind, trying to do your best to concentrate and be mindful. Are there any just questions about that experience or how that practice goes? Obstacles, challenges, anything not clear? Again, not that we're perfect, but that we kind of know what the practice is. Good. So as many of you know who come regularly over this past year, we've been involved in with a group of people in what we call intensives on the mind trainings, a body of practice that comes originally from Indian Buddhists, went into Tibet and now is spreading around the world, but it's an ancient Buddhist practice of 58, 59 slogans that help us really train the mind in seeing clearly and really seeing with the wisdom of a Buddha, sort of like a cheat. You know, how does an awakened person think about things? So these 59 little simple slogans kind of give us a picture of how to do it, and then we have to practice. And they're, again, they go from the deepest aspects of Buddhism, seeing the whole unfolding of life as dreamlike or illusory, the nature of the mind, the nature of self, sort of what's called absolute awakened mind, to very, you know, practical, how to be a compassionate person, how to be a kind person, how to deal with adversity. So anyhow, in Tibet, they're called Lojong, mind training. So, you know, over this year, I kind of can't do all of them. We do all of them in the intensive, but on Sundays, try to pick out ones that could be meaningful to everyone. When I was here last week, for those of you who were here last week, how many were here last week? See, if I was a good professor, I would say. And how many remember what the topic of the talk was? Yeah, well, at least two people, not three people. And how many people not only remember the topic of the talk, but actually practice the topic of the talks? Yeah. Okay. So this is the problem. So again, please remember. And this is so, and I think I gave a talk on this a number of weeks ago. This is, you know, I won't go into it now, but this is the problem. We live in a culture where we are information gatherers, information absorbers, and we move boom, 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 right? And unfortunately, a lot of information, yeah, it can be just held momentarily, and we got the information, and we go on. But teachings that are, and practices that really have to do with changing and transforming our mind, our life, our emotions, unfortunately, we have to reflect on, we have to contemplate, or they will go out of our mind, like, you know, all this other information that we're endlessly gathering. Is that clear? So that's a problem in our culture. You know, you don't leave here, as people might have done a generation or two ago, and had a two-hour walk home, where you had time to slowly chew on the point you were here. We leave here, and right away we jump into the next activity, the next email, the next, you know what I'm saying? And so it's not like we don't mean well, but we have to understand that we have to be much more conscious and deliberate when we hear teachings that are meaningful to us, to incorporate them. I mean, this is just the nature of the beast that we're living with in our modern culture. So last week, the slogan was learn the three difficult points. And for those of you who might have forgotten, and again, you can find these online. There's many books on commentary. It's a fairly popular teaching, you know, for explanation. The first one is it's difficult to recognize, identify disturbing, unwholesome mind states, emotions, right? That's the first thing that's difficult, just to kind of notice that they're arising in me. They've taken me over. They're taking me in this direction. So that's the first difficulty. Second difficulty is, even though we might have noticed them, to stop them and do something different. Okay? So that's, and we talked about ways to do it. That's what we practice here, all those ways. How to be mindful of the mind and how to do something different with the mind. That basically gets us away from the cultivation of affliction, negativity, unwholesomeness, and moves us in the positive direction. And the third thing that we... difficult point that we often forget is a commitment to be consistent over time. So we might, something may happen, we may identify it and do something, but the next one comes along and we're swept away. So, you know, the third thing is to develop that intention, aspiration to make the practice of turning afflictive, disturbing mind states, so to no longer cultivate them, no longer get lost in them, no longer intensify them by giving them lots of play within our mind intention, and to begin to do something else. I mean, it's a very foundational practice. But again, we need to be reminded. So that's why they have these kind of guidelines. Again, as all of you know, the practice is easy, right? You know, we come to Dharma talks, we read, you know, you kind of go, oh, yeah, I should be meditating, I should be concentrating my mind, I should be, you know, not cultivating negativity, I should be, right? You know, I should be more positive, more wholesome, more loving, more kind, more patient. We all know that, don't we? That's why you're here. The problem is what? We forget. And when we forget, we are just swept away by the way we've always done it. So therefore... in the Buddhist meditative tradition, there are not only the teachings, but there are these other teachings that help us remember to do the teachings and the practices. And they, in a certain sense, are more important, right? They are even often more important. Because if we know what to do, but we forget to do it, then not only are we not really fulfilling what we want, but we often can lead to oh, I don't know what. We often think, oh, this is not working, or I'm not changing, or you see, we can often go into a negative, a negativity about our own transformation. We think there's something wrong. And there's nothing wrong. We're just not realizing that there's a whole body of things we need to be practicing to help us remember to practice. Right? So the slogan we worked with last time was learn these three difficult points again. Now, the one I wanted, they will cross over. We'll see how far we get today. This slogan, number 51 out of the 59, says, this time, practice the important points. Okay? I enjoy that it begins with this time. I mean, that could mean what? Could mean this lifetime, right? Remember, you might have been in other lifetimes, but you forgot. So this lifetime, remember it. Or it could mean at this stage of your life, this time. Or it could be right now. Even if we've forgotten, this time, don't forget. So it's a real kind of wake-up call to us to say, and why do we say that? Because, see, everyone in this room, see, I don't know you all, but I know everyone in this room, this time in our life, at this moment, we are here together because for some reason our life has brought us to the point where we have the interest, the time, the leisure to investigate, to learn another way to live. Okay? So this is a very, in the unfolding of our life, we may look back on our life and go, yeah, there are other times in my life, I didn't have this opportunity. Or I might have been aware of these things, but I was busy doing this or that or consumed with this or there was a lot going on. But this time, right, we're all here. And this time, for many of us in our life, this is the time to make the shift, to make the turn. So the slogan is called, this time, practice the important points. The first point, and again, other people are more important than I am. Let me read it again. First point is, other people are more important than I am. Right? For some, that may not sound too good. But this is really the antidote to self-centeredness. Okay? This is not self-abnegation, you're unimportant, always, this is not saying that. This is the antidote to the usual way we operate in the world, which is, I am more important than other people. My needs, my wants, my desires, my interests, these are more important than other people's, right? And so this willingness to acknowledge that while I have, again, my needs, my wants, my interests, my things in life, I live in a world with many, 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 many other people, right? And if I don't see their needs, their wants, their sufferings as at least equal to mine or of equal concern to me as my own, then I am just living a totally self-absorbed, self-centered, as extreme narcissistic life, right? And therefore we will create a culture, we will create relationships that will reflect one or the other, right? If my operating principle in life is me, 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 then I will bring that into all my relationships, right? And I will probably experience conflict, disappointment, or, I mean, all kinds of things. You all know that. If I'm only thinking about myself, if I cannot value the others in my life. And oftentimes, in any kind of relationship, we have to what? We have to value their happiness more than our own. Right? We have to let go of some of our stuff because we want to be supportive or helpful to them. If we can't ever do that, then we will, whether they're our loved ones, our children, our parents, our family, our friends, if we cannot let go of ourselves to be there for others, again, we will create, you know, we are entering the world in a very dysfunctional way. Because it begins small, but then it's like, how do I enter the world? How do I enter the work world? How do I enter the social world? How do I enter the political world? Right? Do I do it just based on my own self-interest? This is what's best for me? Think about politics. This is what's best for me? Or do I enter it in terms of what's best for others? Can you see it's a very different way of entering the world, of entering relationships, of even looking about how I conduct my life? Is my life self-centered or other-centered? But we will talk about that. So that's the first important point. Second important point is spiritual practice is more important than worldly pursuits. Okay? Now, since we are all here lay people, we are not renunciates, we're not monks, we're not nuns, we're not hermits, is that correct? Yeah, so we are in the world, right? And to be in the world, we are probably everyone here, we are involved in worldly pursuits. Is that clear? So this is not saying abandon, give up all your worldly activities. Is that clear? Because I know people kind of think, ooh, maybe that's, no, that's not what's being said here. It's really saying to us what within us is most important. Right? You know, are my worldly activities, my worldly pursuits, the most important thing in my life and where I'm putting all my energy? Not only our physical energy, but our mental energy, right? Which is more important, right? So not only may we have work and relationships, but does it consume me? Am I obsessive about it? Right? Or am I going about all my worldly activities, but from my so-called spiritual, right? You see? In other words, as I go through my day, whatever I'm doing, am I cultivating mindfulness? Am I cultivating self-awareness? Whatever I'm doing, wherever I'm working, whatever my relationship, am I aware of myself? Am I aware of the actions of my body, speech, and mind? Right? Am I doing my best to cultivate wholesome emotions, wholesome mind states, or negative ones? Right? Am I showing up in the world as a kind, patient, compassionate being wherever I am or not? So, you know, one can be in the world, one can be pursuing worldly pursuits, but one's mind doesn't have to be caught up like that, you see? One can be in the world, but one's mind is aware that it's working from a whole different operating perspective than perhaps what is being asked of you by the external world. You have some kind of value system. You have some kind of sense of yourself and some kind of sense of how you want to show up in the world. Again, this, when you hear a spiritual person, this doesn't mean that you're like, quote unquote, let's say you're a Buddhist or a Christian, you know, you have a name tag, right? Seems like a lot of people do that these days. You know, it's, you don't need a name tag. You don't need to identify yourself as a spiritual person, right? You have to be one. in how we show up in the world. So again, I mean, these are mirrors, right? They're not absolute truths. They're mirrors. They're meant to kind of challenge us, hold a mirror up to us. You know, as I look at my life, as I look at how I operate in the world, do I value other people equal, if not more than myself, their needs and wants? And do I really give, you know, is my spiritual, my transformation, whatever it is, you know, where I come from? Or am I lost in worldly pursuits? The third important point to practice this time is practice is more important than intellectual understanding or talking. Okay, this is very, very important, right? Especially, again, in our culture, where access to information is infinite. I mean, that may not be true, but it's like, it's infinite, right? Right? If one had an interest in meditation, if one had interest in Buddhism, if one had an interest in spirituality, whatever, what, one could endlessly be reading about it in books, online, in chat room, you know what I mean? Endless. Listening endlessly to talks, right? You could be listening to Dharma talks by every great Buddhist teacher from morning till night. And there may be people in this room who do that, right? And we may get with people and we love to talk about it. And that's not bad. I mean, I'm not saying these things are bad. Right? We love to talk about spiritual things, religious things. But if we balance it in terms of time spent, am I putting most of my effort into the practice? Because it's only through practice, unfortunately, that we change. Right? We could have an incredible collection of the most, you know, of all the great wisdom of the world, right, on our bookshelves. And we could have read them all. But if we don't practice the truths in them, it's like, so what? Right? We could listen to all these endless Dharma talks and be very... But if it doesn't change our life, so what? Right? So this is a very key instruction. Again, it doesn't say that intellectual understanding or talk and these conversations or reading cannot be helpful. But we have to be clear what is more important. And you know that. We know that in every other area of our life. If there's any time we want to develop a skill, a competency, work skill, sports skill, cooking skill, any skill, how do you develop competency? Anybody have any idea? You've all done it. What? Practice it. You have to practice it. Right? We all know that. Right? You know, we could have read every parenting book in the world. But if we're not practicing it, and who do we practice it with? What? The children. And we have to practice it so it becomes, you know, so we know it, we live it. We could, you know, we could read every book on relationships and how to have a good relationship and how to communicate and how to love. Or, you know, you're right. But if we don't practice, it's never going to have a positive effect in our lives, right? Again, we can read about meditation, and we can be convinced, yeah, it's very beneficial, it's good for me. But if we don't do it, and if we don't do it consistently, and if we don't, we'll never develop competence in it, and therefore we will never receive the benefits of it. I mean, that is just the truth. So this is a very... Again, it's not saying that it's not instructive, it's not inspiring to read or listen to, you know, talks that are meaningful to you. But if that's primarily what we're doing, we're getting our transfer, we're getting our so-called transformation by these momentary highs that come from reading something or listening to something. But in our daily life, we're not practicing it. Again, very limited benefit. Right? You know, we may have a big bookshelf. These are the books I got 3 years ago, or 1 year ago, or 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, right? And we may have a bookshelf that goes all the way through to the most recent, and there is an industry turning out Buddhist and spiritual books nonstop, right? Right. But if you said to yourself, if you looked at the first book, you picked it up, I invite everyone here, when you go home, pick up that first book. Have you realized all the truths in that one? You know, there is in education, there's this thing called competency-based training. You don't move on to the next set of skills until you kind of mastered the, you know, it's like, well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Or else it's just intellectual learning, right? But, you know, is the student becoming competent? Do they understand it? Can they practice it? Can they demonstrate it? Now, as somebody following a spiritual path, where do we demonstrate proficiency? In life. Right? Not in our intellectual understanding, not in our ability to have conversations, but in our life. That's the test. You know, many people these days, they kind of think, oh, it's my worldly life, and this is my spiritual life, and this sucks, but this is really going great over here, you know? This is not engaged Buddhism. This is not Buddhism. Right? It's about becoming a person, kind of person, an awakened person, an enlightened person. It doesn't mean we look like the gentleman behind me, the Buddha, but it means those attributes of a Buddha begin to grow and manifest in our life, even just a little bit. So practice is the third one, is practice is more important than intellectual understanding or talking. The fourth one is inner change is more important than external conditions. Again, another key point. Again, it is very easy to think if I want to be happier, if I want to have more positive emotions, then I know what to do, which is what? Change my external conditions. Right? Change where I live, change where I work, change my career, change my relationship, change my government, change my, right? We're always focusing that the answer is external. And yet we can't help but notice, if we take an objective look at life, our own life as well as the life of the world, right? While there has been unceasing external change, yet, unfortunately, the human condition seems to remain the same, right? Variations on a theme. So, if one wants to change oneself, to be a happy person, to be a satisfied person, right? To have whole, you know, to have a good life. Primarily, it's got to come from an inner transformation that is not conditioned by external circumstances. And this is very hard for us because we live in a culture where we tend to blame the external world for our issues, don't we? Yeah, that's you know, blame, blame, blame. And yet the external world is the way it is because of the actions of human beings. And the actions of human beings is coming from their minds. Right? So if that inner transformation does not occur, the external will never change. I mean, it'll go up and down, as you see throughout history. Good times, bad times, war, peace, progress, regress. Right? I mean, that's the way it is. And, you know, certainly we want the world to be a better place. How could we not? But we have to be very clear. Where our own personal suffering and happiness is coming from, and where the world's is fundamentally. And our own personal unhappiness, suffering is coming from within us. It doesn't mean that we are not conditioned by external conditions, situations, but the response is always coming from us. And that is a big shift to remember. So that's the fourth important point. Interchange is more important than and please remember, he's not saying black or white, either or. He's saying more important. Other people are more important. Doesn't mean I'm unimportant. You know, other people are. Spiritual practice is more important. Doesn't mean that worldly pursuits are unimportant. Is that clear? It means, you know, keeping things in perspective. Practice is more important than intellectual understanding is talking, and interchange is more important than external conditions. Okay? And the fifth and last point to remember is bodhicitta is most important of all. So this is the first time in the translation. The others were, this is more important. Okay. This one trumps. This is trumps. It's interesting. This one is bodhicitta is most important of all. Now, bodhicitta is the essence of the Buddhist path and the Buddhist mind. It is, and bodhicitta actually means in Sanskrit, the awakened mind. Okay. But this awakened mind has different aspects. But what it means simply for us is that we want to liberate ourselves and all beings from their suffering. That is most important. And to accomplish that, we need to awaken ourselves. So we have realized freedom from suffering, freedom from delusions, freedom from affliction, right? This is a fundamental way that we can help the world and then be able to help others from our own personal example and our own personal experience, right? So having, an enlightened aspiration, to be awake, to have a deep aspiration, to want to unceasingly work for the benefit to help other beings, free them from their suffering. This is most important of all. Because this is an aspiration that can permeate everything we do. Wherever we are, whatever situation we're in, from the most difficult to the most easiest or undifficult, from the most terrible to the most wonderful, you know, it doesn't matter what. Our aspiration is always the same. So this bodhicitta, this cultivation of the awakened mind, the enlightened mind, is the most important of all. So let me read them again, and then I'd like to hear from you. Any questions, challenges? It's all fine. So the point, the fundamental point is this time, practice the important points. And the five are, other people are more important than I am. Spiritual practice is more important than worldly pursuits. Practice is more important than intellectual understanding or talking. Interchange is more important than external conditions. And bodhicitta, or cultivating the awakened mind, is most important of all. So at this point, any questions, challenges, confusions, you know, and really most importantly, like, how do I practice this in my life? And again, if there's anybody on live stream, you can, I'll take questions from there. So again, floor is open. Don't be shy. Unless you're all in total agreement. If you're not, then... Yes.
Thank you, Fred. It's very obvious when I think of the question, the point that other people are more important than me. It's obvious there's a lot more of them.
Yes.
The second thing, I can think of a lot of people that are more important than me. For a lot of reasons, what they do or who they are. But to take any single person out there in the world, a total stranger, it's tough for me to see that they're either less or more important than I am. Why should they be, for instance, do they, you know, should they be riding my bike, sleeping in my bed, using my bank account, or should it be thought of in a different way?
Yeah, should be thought of in a different way. Yeah, so this is, you know, again, if you want to go to the extreme, Rick, you know, this is a free country. If you want to go to the extreme and give everything away to everyone and say, you know, that's quite something. But for most of us, we're not there yet. Or that may not even be desirable. But that's not what this is saying. It's saying, for example, you know, so Rick likes his bike. He likes to ride his bike. It's his acknowledging, oh, other people are also like me. You know, they would, it would be nice if they had the means to go for a bike ride. See, it's opening to the world, right? Yeah, if Rick says, yeah, it's nice that I have a bank account. It's nice that I have savings. It's nice that I have health insurance. I mean, whatever it is. But just not to stop with me and acknowledging, oh, perhaps everybody else, what, are just like me and would like to have these things in life. So that's how it opens it up. Right? And that's, you know, that to me is very important, this, you know, teaching. You know, other people are just like me. Right? The Dalai Lama always says, you know, everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer, just like me. Everybody around the world, any economic strata, you know, wherever you go, right? You know, men, women, you know, any... Everyone's the same, right? Everyone wants to be happy. Nobody wants to be unhappy and suffer. Everybody wants their children to be happy. Everybody wants to live in safety. Everybody wants to drink clean water. Everybody wants to have enough food to eat. Is that true? I mean, it's, you know, don't make this too complicated. Right? Everybody wants to be free of violence, just like me. You know, that's what I want for me, my family. Oh, but once I acknowledge that, then I go, well, when I enter the world, do I enter the world from that point of view? Or do I say, oh, well, I got it. I'm going to hold on to it. Right? That's what's most important. Let other people get theirs. I mean, can you see the other way of looking at life? So it's an opening, you know, but again, it's also numerical. You know, like you say, there are 6 billion people in the world, there's only one of me. So from a numeric point of view, who's more important? You know, sometimes in life, we have to let go of the me to benefit the whole. Right? And one should do that gladly. And there, you know, we have those choices all the time. Do I do this? Do I do that? Well, I really want to do this, but life is asking me to do that. Or there's a need over here, but I really want to relax. You know what I mean? Or I want to go, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, how do I live this life? So it's, you know, it can be very small. It can be very big. But I think it's worth reflecting on. You know, how do I operate in this world? Right? I mean, one can actually, you know, be sort of a nice person doing nice things, but realize, yeah, I'm really just doing it within my own framework, you know, my own likes and dislikes, needs, wants, you know, I got, right? I mean, that could be true too, what's going on underneath. You know, I mean, to really say I'm willing to let go, right, is, It takes a leap. That leap is easier if one has come to certain levels of realization about the self, which is central to Buddhism, but even just to begin to play with it, I think, is beneficial. Does that make sense? Yeah. Do you have a nice bike? What? No, not too good. All right. Other questions or challenges? Yes. I mean, again, people who know me, you can be very direct if it doesn't make sense or you think this is, you know, it's important that we be able to talk about these things. Yes, ma'am.
First of all, it's my first time here, uh-huh. And I'm very, very, very pleased to be here.
Good.
Such a welcome place.
Thank you.
And as you were telling, I didn't take that extreme, what you're saying. I think we live in a self-centered society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other one's more important for me means that we have to not think about me and us collectively for a better world. And by doing that, we start feeling much better of yeah. ourselves.
Yeah, so that's an excellent point, which I make at other times, but I appreciate you reminding us, you know, this very fundamental fact that, you know, not only does thinking of others equal to myself make sense numerically or just in terms of better world, but also to live that way feels better. It is a better way to live, right? Because when we are in our self-concerned, my needs, my wants, self-protection, secure, you know, there's always barriers, there's always kind of control issues, you know, to get it the way I want, which means there's always underneath levels of anxiety, right? There's always underneath levels of stress. There's always underneath, you know, we're having to kind of control and manipulate a lot life to get it the way we want and keep it the way we want, right? And this other way, which is not dependent on all of that, but is just very open and free. And it's like, yeah, wherever I am, whatever happens, my job is to awaken myself, liberate myself, free myself of all my delusions and constrictions, and to see if I can be of benefit, you know, to those around me or the world. And then it's very simple, and it feels good. You all know that. We all know that, right? When we're helping another human being, when we're acting in a loving, compassionate, open, supportive way, how does that feel? It feels good. I mean, that's... So from a purely selfish point of view, you know, practicing altruism in life is probably the way to go, right? You know, and again, we know that. right? I mean, we look at our, we have the example of our president. And again, I'm not talking politics, but you see someone who is so totally, you know, he's symbolic, right? Of what a total egocentric, self-centered, my happiness looks like, right? And one might say many things about our president, which I'm not going to get into in terms of politics, but does he appear to you as a happy man? When you see his face, is he always smiling and looking peaceful? No, you can see he's a tortured human being. What's he tortured by? His egocentricity, his self-centeredness, right? So I think it's a wonderful example because we see it at the height of power and the height of being seen, right? I mean, in that sense, he's giving us a wonderful opportunity to see what that looks like, right? When there are no restraints. See, most of us keep ourselves under restraint. You see what I'm saying? I mean, of course, people who live with us kind of know the other side, but usually we're fairly civilized and we keep ourselves under restraint. But you can see what happens when it's just unrestrained. Well, that's what it looks like. So that's a good kind of wake-up call. Like, I got to make sure that I don't have the seeds of that in me. So good. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say you're probably taking it too literally. Right. So what? Oh, you're not on. Okay. So the question is this question of, do I need to be totally liberated first before I can benefit the world? And the question is no, but it could be yes. It depends your life and what your aspiration is. Now, again, the test ultimately is always in the world, right? So if one devotes one's life to study and practice and meditation and really, comes to great awakenings and understanding about the nature of mind, the nature of no self, one has done all the compassion, loving kindness, and one is, right, one still has to go into the world. You know, in Buddhism, there's a saying, a small saint hides herself or himself in the mountains. A great saint hides himself or herself in the marketplace. And that means, that the test of it is in the marketplace. So it's, I would say, it's finding the balance. But again, what's most important? In the balance, and what is being shared with us today, and I believe it's true, is if we are not, as we go active in the world, whatever we're doing, if we're not very attentive to what's going on inside us, what's our intention, what's our mind state, we can be actually outwardly looking like we're doing good, but inwardly we are still just cultivating self-centeredness, anger, judgment, right? Even though outwardly we could look like saints. So this inner cultivation where our mind and mind state is congruent with the actions of our body and speech, I would say is very important, right? So so the practice gives us that congruence, and these kinds of teachings give us the mirror to be asking ourselves, where am I really, I look good on the, there's a slogan, I think I might have done it here, but I thought I did it in the group. It's called, of the two judges, rely on the primary one. Did I do that one here? Yeah, which is everything in life is in these slogans. So it meets that point. It really says, of the two judges, rely on the important one. And there, the important one is me, right? Outwardly, people could think, I'm a saint, right? Wow, what a wonderful person, right? People could be praising me to the sky. But if I know inside, that's not true. You see, who do I believe? See, that's what it means. Who do I believe? Yeah, one has to ultimately develop a sense, a strong sense of self-awareness, where one is very aware of what's, you know, really going on within us and where the actions of our body, speech, and mind are coming from. Right? Even if the external world is, you know, you're thinking we're great. You know, it's great that the external world thinks, oh, we're, you know, you're so peaceful. But yet you know inside you're all still pretty torn up. But we got a nice look about us. Again, is it nice that people ascribe positive things to us? Well, it could be if it motivates them. But we can't be fooled what that means. We can't be fooled. We have to be self-aware and holding up a mirror to ourselves. Not critical, not judgmental, like bad, 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 or you hypocrite, phony. But it means like, oh, you know, I need to be more congruent, that my internal world is congruent with my external. Okay, and the other question is, oh, that was it. So any other questions about how to live this and practice it? Yes, just wait.
Thank you. I struggle with, I don't have any issues with giving myself, but I think sometimes I give myself a little too much to my loved ones. Mm-hmm. So it's confusing to me. I don't understand, I guess, how to balance my needs with over-loving and over-giving to satisfy the needs of others, because that's the right thing to do and it feels good. But at the same time, I'm neglecting my own personal needs and maybe making myself sick sometimes.
Right. So that's certainly, everybody heard the question. Yeah, so I think you're right. You know, when you hear these general teachings, you know, that's why in Buddhism, it's always good to have commentary from a teacher, because again, it's often not clear. You can hear it and go, oh, you know, I hear it. I mean, so everybody else in the world is more important than me and I should just give to the point of exhaustion, right? Because that's the way. But no, he's not saying that, okay? Yeah, so, you know, where's that line, you see? See, there's no line, is there? That's the problem. You know, there's no clearly demarked line when you're giving enough and when you're giving too much. Is there? No, it's a moving target, right? As well as it can depend on you, right? Sometimes you might have more to give, right? Other times you may have less to give. Right? But on the other hand, sometimes we have more to give, but we think we don't, which is also true, right? Many times all of us know we have risen to the occasion and we've been surprised. Wow, right? Yeah, I had reservoirs of goodness in me or service or love, you know what I mean? Or, obviously, if you've ever been a parent, and taking care of a child or been a caretaker, right? You know that's a constant challenge, right? Where's that line? Oftentimes we have to cross it because we find we can cross it. So, I mean, again, a lot of this is just self-awareness, you know. You know, am I depleted because of the actual what I'm doing? Or am I depleted by my resistance to what I'm doing? See, it's very interesting, right? What I found over the course of my own practice over the years is I am amazed that the capacity to give within norms is fairly unlimited, and that there is a great reservoir of energy when one is always coming from a positive, loving, open place. Right, but when I am coming from a place of resistance, which means there's a part of me that's saying, I really don't want to do this, right? or why do I have to do this, or I'm sick of doing this, even though, even if it's like in the background, right? That could be creating friction, which is sort of sapping our energy. You know, so it's not easy, okay? Is that clear? You know, and I think there has to be self-awareness. But having said that, on the more overt level, I would say, you know, we have to be true to who we are, where we are at, right? We have to know ourselves. And if our roles in life demand a certain kind of energy or a certain kind of application, and we realize at a certain level we kind of lose it, right? Yeah, I think that self-care is important. I mean, we're also talking about, you know, the inner practice is more important than the outer, right? So, and that has to be, I mean, I said that in response to earlier, we have to take care of ourselves, right? Yeah, but, see, that comes back to that aspiration, right? So why am I pulling back to kind of nourish myself or restore myself? So I, when I come back into the world or come back into the relationship or come back into doing, I can be more present, I can be more helpful. So even if we're pulling back, the aspiration is to go forward. Is that clear? And I, you know, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's good to get a good night's sleep, right? Not only does it feel better, but we can probably show up better for other people when we, you know, if we're grouchy and tired, right? You know, that's why it's probably good to eat well, right? So we are energized. It's also a good time to take, you know, people say, well, you know, isn't meditation, you know, going off by yourself for a half an hour selfish? No, I say, no, it's essential, right? Because it makes us able to show up in the rest of our life in a more grounded, centered way. Right? You know, it's not, you see what I'm saying? It may look like you're taking a half an hour for yourself, but your aspiration is really, you're taking it because you want to be able to be of more benefit to others. So sometimes we have to stand our ground and know that, right? Because other people may not see it. I go, wow, she's become really selfish every day. She goes off in her room, closes the door, and you know what I mean, right? You know, people, you know, wow, she's really just, since she got into this spiritual stuff, she's really just more, all she thinks about is herself, right? And you know, and sometimes the world can respond that way to us. So, you know, so again, I think it's often important that we explain to people so they don't misinterpret. No, hopefully what I'm doing is making me a better person, a better partner, a better mother, a better daughter. You know what I mean? It's a better employee, whatever, you see? So sometimes you got to tell people that because people, you know, if you said, I'm going to go in my room now and I'm going to, I want to research this subject on the internet, you know? They say, oh, okay, yeah, you know. You see what I'm saying? Oh, well, that's good, good, good. Tell me what you come up with, you see? You see, you know what I mean? I mean, if we were using the, it's interesting. You know, if you're saying, well, you know, I'm going to go off this, this is this program, this TV program I really want to watch tonight. Well, people say, great, you know, good, good. But if you say, yeah, I want to go, I'm going to go off for an hour and just, you know, meditate and do some spiritual reading. You're being very selfish. You're only thinking of, you know, it's kind of an interesting world. So you have to be able to kind of stand your ground in a nice way. You know, I mean, but again, you know, that's why, you know, we can't run our life by what the world thinks of us. You know, we have to know who we are. We have to know our values. We have to know our aspiration. Sometimes for those around us, we are willing to explain ourselves, but they still might misinterpret, right? Just the way it is. I mean, we might misinterpret them too. So it goes both ways. Other questions? This time practice the important points. Other people are more important than I am. Spiritual practice is more important than worldly pursuits. Practice is more important than intellectual understanding or talking. Interchange is more important than external conditions. And bodhicitta, or cultivation of the awakened mind, is most important of all. And again, when we say awakened mind, don't make it think like you have to be like a Buddha. It also means the mind that wants to awaken. Somebody slipping in under the wire? Okay. All right. We have just a couple of minutes. Yes.
I think this is just commentary to the previous question.
Uh-huh.
I also struggle differentiating, like, it's like compassion fatigue all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in what I've been processing, what you've been saying, I'm thinking it's more of like an intention. Like, what's the intention in you doing that? Like, in you helping that other person?
Mm-hmm.
Is it for that other person, or is it to validate an insecurity that you have, or could to validate be. Your ego?
Yeah, could be. Yeah, that's what that self-awareness does.
Right.
And you know, sometimes we got to ask ourselves, because the easiest thing is to just do something. You know, sometimes we ask, you know, am I really helping that person? Does that person really want to be helped? You know, have they ever listened to me in the past? And I was like, right? And let me just say a quick thing, and that's another talk. See, I don't believe in compassion fatigue. I believe in empathy fatigue. Compassion is active. Compassion is actually doing something to alleviate the suffering of another. I think that's always energizing. I mean, over time, we need to rest. But I think what people are really talking about is empathy. We just kind of, we empathize with the suffering of other people, but it kind of we stay stuck in it. Compassion is active because we're actually doing something to alleviate, and it has some intelligence to it because we know, you know, it may not work out. Or, you know, oftentimes we don't do anything because we know we really don't have somebody who, or a situation that's really amenable. So anyhow, that's my 2 cents on that. And last but not least.
Thank you. So how do I get myself out of my own way
mm-hmm.
in my practice? Because to me, that's the most difficult part of all of this. Yeah. I'm intellectually aware.
Yeah,
I'm even emotionally aware
mm-hmm.
of the importance of everything that we've
mm-hmm.
talked about. Yet I find myself standing firmly in my own way.
I understand that. That's why, and that's another talk, is, and again, you know, these are like, this is American stuff, right? We have to surrender to the teachings and the teacher. I don't mean like get down on the and worship, but we have to kind of realize just what you said, right? I'm stuck. I intellectually know everything. Right? You could probably say, well, I could even be up there like Fred and probably give an even a better talk, you see? You know what I mean? I mean, that's how we are, right? But the idea of just follow the practice, just do the practices, follow the directions, right? I mean, all I can speak about is Buddhism, 2,600 years old, all different cultures, historical times. You know, it's a proven methodology for transformation, right? All the practices have been tested. You know, it would seem it'd be a no-brainer, wouldn't it? Just surrender and just follow directions. But not us. What have you noticed about yourself? He thinks what? Tell the truth. Inside there, what does he think? I think I know best, yeah. You know, if you really knew, you'd be free. And, you know, I'll end on that. I mean, again, this is our problem. You know, many of us who come to Buddhism, we come to it intellectually. The teachings make sense to us, the practice makes sense to us, right? And we think because we get it intellectually, we got something. No, all we have is an intellectual understanding. And to, I mean, there's a humility in that. Right? Do you know how to play the piano well? What? Yeah, I mean, and you know, I mean, like, if you've read every book about piano playing, listened to every great pianist play, you could, you know, you know, if you could recognize when other piano players make mistakes, right? You might think, what? I really know how to play the piano. But the truth is what? We don't have a clue. And that's hard for us to admit. I don't have a clue. If I really understood this stuff, I mean, people say that to me all the time, you know, I know this. And my response always is, no, you don't. If you knew it, you'd be doing it. Right? We intellectually know it. Yeah, you know that. I rest my case.